Iwane nogum bangcho sangha asideriroguna na. Now departed, summer has arrived in full force. In the world of suchness, where neither coming nor going, not even staying, I will cry like a baby, flow like a stream, sing like a bird, and bloom like flowers. Yesterday and today, we are celebrating summer solstice. And these days are the longest days of the year. As you know, days of rain coupled with a spring runoff from the Rockies have created a massive flooding in Alberta. It's a natural disaster and devastation. The magnitude of the disaster is such, according to Globe and Mail, more than 100,000 people have been ordered to evacuate. In Calgary alone, 95,000 people have been evacuated. fire and police officials and Canadian forces personnel, they are all involved in rescue effort. Surely there have been fatalities. People have been drowned and swept away. And non-human beings as well. We don't even know how many. And these people, they need your support. They need your sympathy, comforting words, and encouragement, you know, to pick up their lives again. Surely many of us think that's remote, that's distant. It's a wonderful day. There's a lot going on in our great city right now. Big outdoor events, like Red Path Waterfront Festival, gathering of tall ships, or Jazz Music Festival, or Pride Week. Surely you can go and enjoy them, but I'd like you to develop a heart for people in Calgary and in the province. Would be good if you cultivate self-restraint instead of self-indulgence. That's developing a heart. So, after all, we live as an interrelated whole in this global village. There's very strong Buddhist teachings. We are all interrelated, codependent. Their misfortunes could easily be ours. many of us, actually all of us, for one reason or another, we become self-centered, even egotistical. And we sometimes hide behind. This is what I would call uncomfortable truth. One of the Buddhist practice of awakening is confront and face this uncomfortable truth. And when I was living at 297 College Street, it's a bigger place with a bigger parking lot. And as you know, we have a visitors program. People come on visitors program, staying at the temple, following temple schedule, for different reasons. But also, it is our duty as priests, as teachers, to guide them, to serve them as a finger pointing to the moon. That's the Buddhist reference. You know. And for instance, the one person who stayed there for quite a long, as I think almost a year. And I've known him actually for a long time. Maybe he was one of the first persons I met when I moved to Toronto from Montreal. That could have been in 1972 or something. Originally, he was he's from England. And he was with me studying meditation when I was 378 Markham Street in the basement apartment. This area sometimes I call student ghettos. They are not student ghettos anymore. But this is a wonderful person, generous. And he had a very good job because he has a PhD and was invited by Queen's University in Hamilton to teach and do research. But anyway, to make a long story short, one thing is he was a smoker. So you see, I allowed him to come on this program on his promise that he would not smoke, at least at the temple, you know, either inside and outside, and on temple grounds. But I noticed he was also smoking. I mean, you know, if you're a non-smoker, you can see right away, you see. He was smoking, you know, sitting, you know, on the back stairways, you see, and sometimes in the bathroom. So I told, gave him this. I mean, also he likes to stop smoking. You know. That's why he came. You know. One of the main reasons why he was there. And I told him, if you like, before you light your cigarette, you have to go outside the temple ground and walk 10 blocks. While walking 10 blocks, I was thinking about, you know, you wanting to quit smoking before you light your cigarettes. But I was not very successful. I don't know if he was really following me. Actually, you know, I cannot supervise him following me. But as a final resort, I said, you would know that the sidewalk, we had a little garden there that abuts the sidewalk. And any day, there are so many cigarette butts. I used to clean them, picking them. I had him to pick the cigarette butts. And he really didn't like that. And also, on another occasion, I had some other visitors. You know, and another thing is, we had a big parking lot. You know, and initially, we didn't use it. Just we had, you know, a few cars on Sundays when people drive. It was, you know, for many years we didn't rent it to commercial, you know, parking lot. So there are always some waste, newspapers and plastic bags and all kinds of things. Also, wind blow them over there. So I tell visitors, it is our duty to keep the temple grounds clean and pick them up. When you go out to do some stretching, you know, in the early mornings, first you pick up those things. You see. So it's a part of a thing is to help them confront their uncomfortable truths. And develop helping hand, whether it is toward environment and toward other people, or even toward yourself. You see. It requires like a little discipline, you know. You know, it's if you give a chance to, well, I usually say, some people say, Sunim, when should I meditate, or how long should I meditate? That's not relevant. If you have 5 minutes, you meditate for 5 minutes. So, I mean, you are not monastics. Those guys, they have lots of time, so they can group off, but not you. You have a full-time job. You may have lots of things you like to do, you know. With friends or kind of family obligations. And on top of that, you come and practice meditation. So I said, minimum practice regularly rather than maximum practice sporadically. That's discipline. So I said, what is minimum practice? 5 minutes. No matter how busy, how crazy you are, you've got 5 minutes for peace of mind. So of course, you know, just 5 minutes. If you have 10 minutes, you can sit for 10 minutes. That you feel better. You know. But 5 minutes, minimum. And that builds up, you know. That's a little discipline, which can take you a long way, even to produce some kind of miracle. You think about it. Well, many of you know that I have been, you know, I pick up usually run down place and renovate and turn it into temples. And early days, I forgot her name, she said, well, she sent her husband to help out with the renovation work because she tried to renovate him, you know. And then she found out it takes a lot more to renovate people. So we had a lot of fun renovating, but not anymore. It's this, you know, from basement we went to this what is it called? Park there. Yeah. Some people are saying, don't go to park there. But that's the cheapest place we can get. We worked and we saved something like $6,000. This was in 1980 or 1979. So we thought we could find some place for $6,000. But we went all over the place, all over the Toronto, but you couldn't get anything for $6,000 even in those days. But then a real estate agent came and told me, well, Reverend Kim, we have the right place for you. And there was a park there. It's a plop house. And then second time when I went to see the place and rang the doorbell and rang, no one came out. And then so we were turning around. And then this guy came out and opened the door and he had nothing on. You know, his genitals are out in the full display. So the landlord was, the previous year, I think some guy was drinking and then fell asleep on Christmas Eve and then got caught, you know, fire, and then it was incredible. So anyway, we were happy to get it, you know. We actually camped out on there was no hot water, no bathrooms, and the co-op house across the street allowed us to take showers. But it was, those were wonderful days. Now, there were about 16 people living at the time. So one came all the way from Mexico City. He was the architect. And in those days, I would give names, like a Todd. Pumpkin flies, you know. and the one guy from Virginia, he brought with the banjo, so from time to time he would entertain us. And so we get up 5 o'clock and do 108 prostration, everybody, and work all day. And it's, well, since we had not much money, hardly any money, so everybody has to have a job. I had this beaten, you know, van, and I did a moving job, mainly for students, small moving job. And then women folks, they made a tofu and they tried to sell it. Nobody in the neighborhood knew what tofu was, so they ended up just giving them away. And then all the men, they delivered the newspapers all night. It didn't bring much money. But finally, they got a good job. That's cleaning out the construction sites. You know, they would go to work around something like 3 or 4 o'clock and then clean out, you know, from one construction site to another. That brought pretty good money. And then we wanted to open, you know, an entryway to the basement, which was half excavated, but they blocked. So, we were looking for mason. And so we found a mason. And then, but we didn't have money. But the Hodges ex-husband, he had the big bike, you know.
Motorcycle?
Harley Davidson? Harley Davidson. So, well, you know, can you offer this in exchange for your, you know, masonry work? And he said, maybe I'll talk to my son. So his son really wanted that badly, so that's what happened. You know? Well, anyway, it's... So I said this last night, I'll say it again. Buddhism is a religion for the future. You see. Yeah. We are still like first generations. Mm. First generation of a Buddhist in this country or in Toronto. Mm. So if you cultivate an awakened heart for the way of a Buddha, then each of you, where you go, where you work, with your family, then people look at you as a Buddhist. It comes with a responsibility, it comes with accountability. And sometimes they look at you, so you go to temple and make meditation, you have not changed a bit. And if you don't mind people saying that, then you are making progress. It's true. Well, as a priest, my job is taking blames, you see. Because it's good. If I make them feel better, then I would love to take blames. Now, speaking about confronting your uncomfortable truth is, you'd better to do it sooner. Mm. Just you look at yourself squarely. You know. Am I harmful? Am I squandering my life? Am I being jealous? Am I being lazy? You know. it's a hard work. We believe in manual labors. The body is important for secular awakening. Well, the monks, let them, you know, we, you know,